Welcome to another episode of Startup Radio. Proud to be a part of the STEM Daddy Network, along with sister shows, Gaming Chords, and STEM Voices. You can reach all of us at stemdaddy.com. I'm Charles Mudd, your host, and today we would like to talk about forming an entity. In one of the prior episodes, we discussed choosing a name, a brand name, a trademark, and various aspects of trademark, and I'll summarize those a bit. And also, we'll return to those in an upcoming episode in which we kind of review what happened in Silicon Valley, the television series, and kind of use that as a model. But today, after summarizing choosing a trademark, where you can go, what you should search, and so forth, I'd like to talk about choosing an entity and kind of just have a discussion without getting into the nuts and bolts, the deep level, have an overview of what should go into considering how you want to choose an entity and actually making that choice. So first, let's review kind of choosing the name of the business. General rule, don't choose a name that already has been used. They or it or he or she may have a trademark for that name. There might be intellectual property in that name. And the laws are designed to avoid confusion in the marketplace, avoid a likelihood of confusion. And so you want to just start off with the principle, don't use somebody else's name. How can you check that? Well, first, you can check it by going to the internet. And let's say the company name is Your Company. That's the name of the business, Your Company. See if yourcompany.com has been taken. Can you get the .com? If you can't get the .com, that's an indicator. But nowadays, we don't just have a small number of top-level domains, or TLDs, such as .com, .net, .org, .edu, which is, for a while, pretty much what it used to be other than .edu and .gov. We have literally hundreds of top-level domains. So just checking the .com is not going to be enough. So where do you go from there? You don't want to take the time to check all the top-level domains. Understandably, you can also go to a domain platform, a registrar, somebody or some entity through which you can register a domain, such as GoDaddy, 101 domain. There are many of them out there. I'm just naming a couple. And go ahead and put in yourcompany.com, but many of them will show you whether that's taken, of course, but it'll also show you alternatives that may be available. And if there are not many alternatives available, if your choices are pretty scant, then that's another indicator. On a side note, you may want to choose a number of registrars to try that with, because some registrars will not have access to some boutique top-level domains, and so by using a couple different registrars, you'll get a full view of what may or may not be available out there. Because you're going to want to choose a good domain for your business anyway, but we're jumping ahead. The other place, and the next place, and perhaps the most important place, would be your state's Secretary of State website. Now, different states may call it a different office, Secretary of State. It may be, you know, if you live in a commonwealth, maybe it's not the Secretary of State. So you choose the state, go to the equivalent Secretary of State, go to Business Services, for example, in Illinois. and we were going to want to do a corporation search. Now, if I have your company as the idea for my business name, I could type it in your company with no space and see what happens, and perhaps I should. But I also need to put in your company with a space. And if, let's say, it was plural, I might want to put in, rather than just your companies, I'd put in your company. And maybe even if it's the singular, your company, you'd want to put in your companies. You may even want to put companies and then your individually and separately. Do not assume that simply because you put in your company and no hits come up that your investigation is done. Use variations. Try to explore. Next, you want to go to the United States Patent and Trademark Office, USPTO.gov. We're not looking at patents right now, we're looking at trademarks. You want to do a trademark search, you want to do a word search. Again, use variations. Your company, no space. Your company, space. Your companies. Your. And then companies separately as well. We're doing a due diligence search to find whether or not an entity or an individual is using a business name that in the end will be similar to yours, because we want to avoid that. And in an upcoming episode, we'll demonstrate the complications that can arise by looking to the television series Silicon Valley for lessons to be learned. But for right now, I've told you, check the registrars for the domain, check the domain itself, see if the .com is available, check registrars to see how broad the availability is for the name with other top-level domains, check your state's Secretary of State or equivalent website, the Business Services Corporation Search. Check the United States Patent and Trademark Office, USPTO.gov. And then depending on how ambitious or how expansive your business may be, you may even want to try to get access to international trademarks and search there. So let's assume that your company is an available name. And as an aside, I remind you there are four types of marks, trademarks. There is a generic mark, descriptive mark, and generally speaking, generic marks and descriptive marks are not protectable. So even beyond making sure that the name is not already used, you also need to consider how protectable your name will be. If you choose air conditioner business and your business is air conditioners, that's not very unique. It's going to be descriptive and it's not going to be protectable. You may be able to register it with the Secretary of State, Air Conditioner Business Incorporated, that latter port incorporated, I will discuss in just a moment. But you may not be able to get a trademark. And so if you're going to spend the time and the money investing in branding and promoting your business, you want to make sure that, I would advise that you make sure that your mark, your business name can be protected. So generic marks, such as Apple for selling apples, or descriptive air conditioner service, are not generic marks are never protectable. Descriptive marks are generally not protectable. If you have acquired distinctiveness, which there's a whole aspect to that we won't get into right now, then you can perhaps get protection after 5 years, but it's an uphill battle. But if you get into the arbitrary or fanciful trademarks, then you are getting more into protectable territory. Arbitrary is perhaps connecting the word Apple with a computer prior to Apple computer doing it, or peach commodes, or strawberry envelopes. The connection between the words is arbitrary. Fanciful may be something that you completely create. For example, Kleenex, prior to Kleenex doing it, and prior to Kleenex, the what I would argue as a fanciful trademark became more of a generic term. Can you pass me a Kleenex? So think of arbitrary and fanciful names, and you will be more protectable. So let's say that your company is arbitrary. We've got the name. What do we do? Well, if we're not ready to use it yet, we haven't even created the entity, the business, we can still apply for a trademark with an intent to use. That is a discussion for another day. But let's talk about the entity, because let's say that we do not want to spend the money, we do not want to file for anything until we know that we can get the business name with the Secretary of State. What kind of entities are there? There is a company, and this is a corporation, and this might have the terms such as in Illinois, you would be able to use company or co, C-O. Corporation or C-O-R-P, incorporated or Inc. All of those designators tie down to the corporation type of entity. And you will hear different discussions about C-corps and S-corps. The C and the S refer to chapters in the Internal Revenue Service code, the IRS code, tax code. By default, when you create a corporation for tax purposes, you are a C corporation. So the C corporation and the S corporation are designations with the IRS for tax purposes. When you file with the state, the Secretary of State, you're not going to choose with your state. It's a designation with the IRS. So there's a corporation. And then there's a limited liability company, or LLC for its abbreviation. There's a limited partnership, LP. There's limited liability partnerships. A sole proprietor. And there is the designation out there of L3C. And finally, there are not-for-profit organizations or non-profit organizations. But really, we have a corporation, limited liability company, partnerships, not-for-profit organizations, or L3Cs. Not-for-profit organizations are essentially just that, organizations whose purpose falls into certain categories and whose intent is not to make a profit. That doesn't necessarily mean that you can't have gross revenue each year. The gross revenue is reinvested into the organization. It simply means that the design, the intent, is not for profit. There's not an there's more of an altruistic motive, or there is an altruistic motive. There are no shareholders or individual members that will benefit from ownership or stocks or similar like. So not-for-profit is altruistic motive, not-for-profit, no shareholders, members, or owners, and not really designed with an intent for profit. So we're not going to discuss those further right now. The L3C is a compromise, and let me take a step back. We also will not be getting into co-ops for our purposes here, which is a little bit different. It's a kind of cross between different organizations. And similarly, an L3C is a cross between an organization where the profit motive, there may be a profit motive, but if it is not the driving motive behind the company, and there is an altruistic purpose. So it's not a pure not-for-profit, it's not a pure for-profit, it's a for-profit with an altruistic purpose. We're not going to discuss those further here today. A partnership is an agreement to work together between two or more entities or individuals. We're really not going to discuss that here. But where that might arise is where you have two businesses or two individuals that want to work together in a particular business endeavor. You might have a partnership between law firms or attorneys. We're not really going to dive into partnerships here because we're talking about what might be a startup, an entrepreneur, a new business. And granted, a partnership certainly can be a new business, but it's not really the focus. So what we've narrowed it down to right now is sole proprietor, corporation, or limited liability company. A sole proprietor is an individual, a person, let's say for a moment, sometimes your laws will discuss a person, talk about a person. An entity can be a person. So a corporation can be a person. So we need to be careful when we're talking about person. That can be the broad definition used by the law to include both an individual and entity. So a sole proprietorship is an individual man or woman who is running a business without any formal entity structure. What are the advantages of being a sole proprietor versus a corporation or a limited liability company? Less complicated in one aspect, in that you don't have a separate entity, you don't have a separate entity's tax return or filings each year. But a sole proprietor is not a recommended approach in my mind. Sole proprietorship may start off that way and then lead to incorporation or organization of the limited liability company. But there are a couple reasons why a sole proprietorship is not necessarily an ideal choice. One is, as a sole proprietor, you have no liability protection that an entity might otherwise provide. Additionally, the appearance that it's less complicated because there's not a corporate tax return, I think, is somewhat deceptive, because you certainly need to keep your business books separate. You need to track your business expenses and income separate. And while that may end up showing on your tax returns, the 1040 for federal tax return, state tax returns, you know, in my mind, I think it's better to have you need to have the books separate anyway and track that separately so that you're not commingling personal and business funds. There's a number of reasons for that. So there's no reason not to, apart from the cost, there's no reason not to incorporate or organize a limited liability company. Incorporate a corporation, create a corporation, or organize a limited liability company. Because if you have to do the books separate anyway, that is a wash, because you're going to do it whether it's an entity or you individually running the business. The sole proprietor does not have the liability protection that an entity would. Being an entity arguably provides you liability, such that if you did something wrong non-intentionally, or you contracted with somebody or some entity with your entity, the entity is the responsible party, or the party that would perhaps be sued or potentially liable, and not the individual. Now, a couple points on that. There is a concept called piercing the corporate veil, and where an individual involved in the business, an owner or a member of a limited liability company, engages in fraud or deception or intentionally does something that gives rise to a claim, or let's say signs a contract and does not intend to abide by the terms of the contract, then arguably the corporate veil can be pierced and the individual can be liable. But generally speaking, an entity provides the individual owners protection, a shield from individual liability. There's another aspect to that that I also want to make clear, and that is, so having an entity can provide, and generally will provide, an individual with protection from liability. That being said, another aspect to consider is that when you're a startup, when you're really first starting your business, you are not probably likely to be able to sign a contract, or let's say a loan, more importantly, without your individual liability as well. So just because you create an entity does not necessarily mean that you will not individually be liable. You may be able to sign a lease, you may be able to sign other documents where the entity is the responsible party, and be sure when you look to sign a contract, you know whether you're signing as the entity, or the entity and the individual both, or the individual. Ideally, it's just the entity, and then the entity is the responsible party, and you are not individually, so long as you do not engage in fraud, deception, or intentional misconduct. So with that liability protection, it makes sense to have an entity. You're doing the books, you're doing your accounting separate from you individually anyway. At least that's a recommended approach. So that's going to be tracked individually. Individually, as a person, as a sole proprietor, an individual man or woman running a business, as a sole proprietor, you do not have the liability protection that an entity provides. And I'm not talking insurance. I mean, we can buy insurance to give us protection. That's correct. But in and of itself, an entity provides the individual members and owners liability protection from being individually liable. Now, there's another aspect to that. Of course, the agreement between the individuals in a corporation or a limited liability company can affect that. Your limited liability operating agreement could require each member to contribute a percentage to any loss, to any liability. But that's the topic for another discussion. Just make sure that you read your operating agreement and incorporation bylaws. We'll get to those in just a moment, or at least talk about what you need to do with developing those. So you're doing the books separately from your individual accounting anyway. So that's a wash between being an entity and a sole proprietor. An entity provides liability protection where a sole proprietor does not, in and of itself. Again, we can always buy insurance, but that's not what we're talking about right now. And yes, you may have to, with the entity, file incorporation documents or organization documents with the Secretary of State and pay an annual report or annual fee. But those costs are nominal when compared to the protection that an entity and the organization structure that an entity can provide. So I would argue that creating an entity is preferable to being a sole proprietor. Sometimes people don't have the funds or the ability to create an entity, and so they start off the business as a sole proprietor. That's fine. Make that choice individually. Talk with an attorney, which is where I was going with the bylaws and such, is talk with an attorney to help create the documents and so forth. But again, the preferred approach, for the reasons we've discussed, is to create an entity. So once you've decided to create an entity, where do you go from there? As a disclaimer and a caveat, none of what we're discussing here today should be construed as individual legal advice or general legal advice to any individual out there or group out there. Rather, it's a discussion of the various concepts to be thinking about. I always recommend speaking to an attorney. So once we've decided to become an entity, we've narrowed it down then to corporation or limited liability company. And given that we've talked about the liability protection that an entity provides, and we've mentioned piercing the corporate veil, I should say that there has been, in the past, there was the perception that a limited liability company would provide its members complete liability protection, that you couldn't pierce the quote-unquote corporate veil of the limited liability company. And that's not accurate. A limited liability company's members can become liable, individually liable, under the same kind of circumstances that would allow an individual to pierce the corporate veil and go to one of the officers of an entity or shareholders and so forth, owners and so on. So just because it's a limited liability company does not mean that you have a complete shield against liability protection. The determination of whether to be a corporation or limited liability company, I'll leave for another chapter in the discussion. But I want to conclude today by just mentioning who you ideally would have, who your advisors would ideally be in getting advice on creating an entity and what type of entity. Clearly an attorney. But you also want to talk to an accountant because there are tax consequences of the type of entity that you become. With the corporation, do you stay a C corporation, which is the default, or do you elect S corporation status? With the limited liability company, do you want to be treated for tax purposes as an S corporation or a partnership? There are tax considerations. You also want to talk to an insurance agent, because while the entity may provide general liability protection, you want liability protection for the entity as well. So talk to an insurance company about getting general errors and omission or other specialized insurance, as the case may be, with your particular industry. I'm going to end the episode here, where we've kind of talked about starting the startup. We've discussed, again, repeating, picking the name, because that's so important. So important. Next, we've kind of worked our way into talking about what type of corporate structure we want, what type of entity we want. We'll come back in another chapter to talk about the differences, some of the differences between a limited liability company and a corporation. But we've concluded with the team that you really ideally would be talking to: a lawyer, an accountant, an insurance agent, to get the advice from those three parties before you create the entity and see where you can go. Until next time, this is Charles Mudd, your host for Startup Radio. I look forward to hearing from you, talking to you. Feel free to reach out to me at charles@stemdadia.com. I'm proud to be a part of the Stemdadia network with our sister shows, Gaming Chords and STEM Voices. A shout out and thanks to our producer, Lindsay Kramer, and thank you for listening, and wish you all a great startup week.